Mr. Thurm, let's be honest. We've seen your people working for pennies, making defective novelty items which at best don't work and don't provide hours of family fun, and at worst are creating serious injury.
So what are you saying?
Saying that your boss, Mr. Lee, is in effect the Mr. Big of the pirate novelty business.
No, he isn't. You're just saying that to get a higher rating on your TV show.
Well, I wish I were, but we saw your people making pirate Minkman schnauzers.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's so funny that you say that. They don't make schnauzers. They make semiconductors for a very reputable computer company. What's wrong with that? Is there something wrong with that? Why is that suddenly wrong to do? I don't understand that. Why are you pointing the finger at other people all the time? Why don't you point the finger at yourself? Do a little more reading, maybe. Less time in court. Maybe that would be effective for you.
Pardon me for saying this, but you seem defensive.
I'm not being defensive. You're the one who's being defensive. Why is it always the other person who's being defensive? Have you ever asked yourself that? Why don't you ask yourself that?
This is an affidavit.
I know that.
Well, let me finish. This is an affidavit from a woman who's got severe nerve damage on her upper thighs from sitting on one of your defective whoopee cushions. Here, read it. Well, I have read it.
So why do I have to read it?
Well, it does pertain to your company.
I know that. Why wouldn't I know that? It's my company. I'm quite aware of that. Is it me? It's him, right?
Recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind are more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Exactly.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
50 years ago today. 50 years ago today.
What happened?
President went to a joint session of Congress and said, you know what? Pony up the money. We're going to the moon.
Yeah. And then NASA shit on itself.
That's right.
Greatest single government agency turd at one time. Like every single NASA guy went, wait, what did he say?
Yeah.
Because I mean, right now we got shit, Jack.
Exactly. That's the gist of several episodes, I believe, of From the Earth to the Moon. It's just like, what's his name from Office Space? He played Jimmy James on News Radio. I can't remember his name, goddammit. Anyway, regardless, there was, you know, all the NASA guys just looking like they had just been tasered. Just like, oh fuck, how are we gonna do this? And see, there I go. You know what I did? This week I said, I'm gonna stop saying the F word on the show for a while.
Oh, I could never do that.
And I, you know, and there I go. We're not even through the theme song yet, and already I've said it.
And you're not even as bad as I am.
No.
No. No, he says. You're terrible.
No, you're awful. Well, that's for a couple of reasons. One, you know, I'm trying to expand the listenership of the show to other venues beyond just the blog and Facebook. And so that's, you know, that's eventually going to include Crooks and Liars, and I swear to God, that is going to happen. It's almost becoming a joke of me saying the show's eventually going to be on Crooks and Liars. But it is. I've been in close consultation with John Amato and Jamie Holly, and they assure me that within a matter of weeks, we will be able to post the show on Crooks and Liars. It would be huge. It's a gigantic audience over there.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily preclude me from saying fuck a lot, does it?
No. No, but I bet
not Crooks and Liars.
No, not Crooks and Liars. But if we want to take it to, for example, Sirius XM satellite radio, then maybe we'll have to be a little more careful. I don't know. I know there are some shows where they use the F word. Some shows they do not.
Over there.
I was going to say, lots of under 18s out there with serious FM radios listening to political shows.
That's right. Everyone, all the kids
fuck
love
them, whoever they are.
All the kids love Serious Left.
They do.
Serious Left.
Oh, is there such a thing as Serious Left?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord.
And that's what it's
I
called.
I know Serious Black. Yeah. It's a Harry Potter drop-in.
You know, so it's, yeah, the liberal channel on Sirius XM is called Serious Left. And then, at least from what I recall, because I don't have Sirius anymore, the conservative channel is Sirius Patriot.
Oh, of course.
So
why don't they just call us Sirius Leftist then?
Yeah, that's right.
Sirius Left.
Sirius Left.
Yeah, we're so unpatriotic. Shot Osama bin Laden in his cock, but we're not patriots.
Right. So lots of stuff to talk about, despite the fact that it was just another slow week.
Yeah.
Slow news week. And it's all proven by the fact that the two biggest news stories over the last week or so have been Newt Gingrich and what else? Armageddon.
Yeah. I liquidated everything. I was so ready.
Well, in the midway, you know what's funny is in it's not, it actually isn't funny. It's funny odd, not funny. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
Is if you're living in the Midwest right now in those areas where the tornadoes are touching down, it may seem like Armageddon.
Yeah, man.
Personal Armageddon.
Yeah. Jesus, wrath of God, man.
Yeah. And had you seen any of that stuff in Nebraska and or Iowa?
No. You know, we get right now we're in the middle of just a shitstorm, just rain and wind, and it's crappy as hell. It's been raining all day, but no tornado. But you never know.
Yeah. And you don't see many there, do you? Or is that something that you contend with during the summer?
Well, you know, we don't ever see them, but like if you drive from here to Omaha, like when the alarms go off in town, the sirens go off in town all the time. We've never seen one in 7 years. But then you'll drive, you know, 20 miles in either direction after the sirens go off, and you'll see whole farms, like, you know, granaries and stuff just torn down, like just hit. So, I mean, they come and go really close by here. But we're pretty close to the river, and I think tornadoes eschew. They don't like river. They don't like to be near rivers.
Tornadoes are eschewing things.
They eschew river. Yeah. So I don't know. This house has been here for 100 years, so it's obviously, you know, it's either due or it's just never going to get hit. Yeah. So I'd kind of like to see one off in the distance. I'm kind of morbid that way.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but no.
No, I would not want to see one. And you and I came from an area where tornadoes typically did touch down quite often, and it was
strange that Northern Virginia corridor there. There was one when I worked at UnionNet. I remember we all went up on the roof. There was one in Fairfax County. There was one right in like Fairfax City one year. Remember that one?
Yeah.
It's very strange. Tornadoes in Virginia.
The high school I attended, I think, had been destroyed a couple of times, or parts of it had been destroyed by twisters.
Wow.
And that's
twisters.
Yeah. And it's kind of on high ground there too. If you, in the Fairfax County, like the hub of Fairfax County, Fairfax City, Fair City Mall, there's like a Bob's Big Boy restaurant there. There used to be, well, it's all built up now. I don't know what the hell they've got there. Gigantic big box stores and things like that. Mm. But tornadoes used to touch down there all the time and just rip through W.T. Woodson High School.
That's right. But I haven't thought of Fair City Mall in a long time.
Fair City Mall.
What a dump that was.
It was the shittiest mall in
that
Northern
was a
Virginia.
Really shitty mall.
I don't know. There was like a fabric store, a movie theater, and an Errol's video.
Yeah.
And then everything else was closed off. Like, it was an indoor mall, but there were no stores in it.
Right. I used to work – when I worked for Errol, Errol Honoran, the Iranian video magnate, they used to send me and this other guy around as like roving trainers. So we would go from store to store, and I hung out. I worked for a couple weeks at that Fair City Arrows. So if you ever went in there and rented movies, you probably saw me.
Yeah. I once ended up getting hooked into being an extra in a TV commercial for Arrows at that
store.
At that store.
At the Fair City Mall store?
Yeah, that store. We're a bunch of us were there. We went to Big Boys there to have I don't know, lunch. I mean, we may have been even cutting class. I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, I used to hang out at that Big Boys all the time when I'd cut class.
Yeah.
Because they had the breakfast buffet there, the bar.
That's right.
The breakfast bar. And I would go there with my book, whatever book I was reading, or you know, and just sit there for like 4 hours and eat breakfast.
And eat. Just read
for 4 hours
and eat.
For like $5.
Yeah. Last time I ate there, last time I ate there, I got a biscuit from the breakfast bar, and the two halves, as I broke the biscuit in half, the two halves were connected by a really long hair. And that was the last time I ate at that Bob's.
Wow.
Right there.
Well, now you just got a little extra there.
Yeah. But we went over there, you know, we had the breakfast bar or something, and then we went over to the mall and ended up getting sucked into doing being extras in a commercial.
Wow, City Mall.
But regardless, lots of tornadoes there, but nowhere near as awful as what's been happening in the Midwest. Which, you know, you hate to almost play politics with it, and I say almost because I don't think it's really playing politics to suggest that. Well, you know, this is all the climate crisis. This is all because they haven't seen events like this so many in a row or so many in the same day in forever since what 19. Blah, blah, blah. I forget the number. It was, I'm starting to confuse the numbers between the last time there were major twisters like this, all condensed, and the numbers and when the last time a Democrat was elected in the New York 26th. it was all like the 19th century sometime.
Yeah, yeah. And this Joplin one, I've never seen death toll numbers like that. I mean, usually a tornado is just massive financial damage, but like two or three people get conked in the head. And this is like fucking 119 people or something.
Yeah.
That's catastrophic for a tornado.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw they were showing footage yesterday. There was one NBC News reporter who was standing next to it was a tractor trailer on its side. And then, like, a shard of wood, like a javelin, jabbed right through it, like right through the undercarriage, and it was sticking out the underside of the vehicle. So it had gone clean through the top and then into the bottom, and so you could see it, like, skewering right through because the thing was on its side.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And then the twisters themselves were, you know, they were estimating it on fractions or of a complete mile wide.
Yeah.
I mean, the footage yesterday, like yesterday, MSNBC sort of turned into the Weather Channel or the Storm Chaser Channel, and they were showing the live footage from those areas, and they were, I should say, the storm chasers in their I don't know, their SUVs or whatever they're driving around, were estimating the width and say, oh, it's like 3/4 of a mile wide. I mean, 3/4 of a mile wide.
I know.
I mean, start, if you have time this evening, go out and walk 3/4 of a mile. And that's the width. It takes you a while to walk 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah, that's a big motherfucking tornado.
It is big. Yeah. And imagine the shards of deadly awfulness whipping around in that 3/4 of a mile wide twist.
Oh, just full of junk and car tires and just junk.
Yeah, that's the thing. One of many things I found completely implausible about that movie Twister.
Yeah, when they're the cows.
When they're actually in the twister, though, they're not.
Oh yeah,
there's not so much a piece of dust in their eye.
Yeah, and, yeah. They're just hey look.
Yeah, and you would think they would have been impaled 90 times over.
Yeah.
By flying
just
debris.
With anything. Yeah. Yeah. Just tiny little. Yeah. It would just tear all the skin off of you, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Like it would be just, like, yeah. It'd be like being sandblasted.
Giant sand bath. Yeah. Yeah. Climate change. Nothing to that.
It is. And you know, it's a
It's freezing here. I'll talk about climate change. I'm freezing my ass off here.
Yeah.
It is cold here, and it's fucking, it's almost June.
Is it really? What's the temperature there? It is. Yeah.
It's got to be in the low, low 60s, but this wind, I mean, it is cold. I just ran outside to get the mail or something, and I was like, God damn. Get some jeans on, and I was freezing. It is cold. It's been a very cold May.
Well, you know,
Nebraska.
Yeah, we were commenting on this morning. I said, well, you know what we need now is we need to close more abortion clinics.
Yeah, we need our priorities straight, really. It's all these abortions that God, you know, God's mad about the abortions, so he sends the tornadoes and the floods.
Yeah. Credit where credit is. That was Joy's remark. I'm taking credit.
And the 9/11s.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, yeah.
It's all payback for the gay and the abortions. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the gay.
All right. I'm surprised Pat Robertson or one of those guys hasn't come out and said, yeah, you know what? No, this isn't climate change. This isn't what have they been calling it, global weirding.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an awful.
Well, that's better than warming, because warming isn't entirely correct.
Well, global warming sounds weirding is better. It's not great. It's still awful, but it's better than warming. I mean, warming is like kind of pleasant. It sounds it's warm.
Mm. 75 and pleasant. Sunny.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, not so much when it's, you know, melting the fucking polar ice caps and there's not gonna be any of it left.
But global weirding is like I don't know, like the great Gonzo is controlling the weather or something. It's
didn't Paul Friedman, or not Paul Friedman, whatever his name is, Friedman?
Thomas Friedman.
Thomas Friedman. Didn't he coin that? Global weirding?
Oh, yeah, maybe he did. God, he's
such a jerk. I think it's one of his
stupid
ass things.
Yeah. I mean, I like Al Gore. I use Al Gore's phrase, which is calling it the climate crisis.
Yeah, it's a crisis.
It is a crisis. But, I mean, it's remarkable that even in the midst of this, again, you know, we can couple this with the oil spill last summer, and so many things that have happened over the course of the last several years. I mean, what does it take? I don't know what it's going to take anymore for us to kind of, hello, wake up.
Yeah, I've told you, Godzillaism.
Godzilla.
It's some sort of mutant creature created by climate change, mm-hmm. running rampant in our cities.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's what, I mean, we're already just fuck the tornadoes and the hurricanes and the earthquakes. We're talking about massive destabilization of coral reefs and entire ecosystems, mm-hmm. you know, mass evaporation, the salt content and everything's all fucked up. I mean, everything is just completely out of whack. And it is something's going to come out of the ocean that didn't exist before, that's just been horribly mutated and has the power to shoot lasers out of its eyes and kill us all. And then maybe we'll get some legislation. But I was watching Too Big to Fail this weekend and thinking, yeah, that's every 10 minutes somebody in that movie asks, why didn't we see this coming? Why are we only dealing with this now? Mm-hmm. It's like that's just the way we, you know, because everybody's making too much money. That's why. Yeah. Can't regulate that shit.
Well, and look at
too much money.
Look at what's happened as a consequence. I mean, Too Big to Fail is a great comparison. I mean, where are we now? We're still in the, I would suggest, in the throes of the recession.
No, sure.
It was caused by all
10% unemployment.
Right. And what is half the country doing? They're screaming for, you know, spending cuts, no more government interference. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't want to do
austerity.
No more regulations. Leave the banks alone.
Mm-hmm. We've learned nothing. Yeah.
Don't get me started on this again.
And what's going to happen? What's going to happen if there's a what happens if Godzilla emerges? And then, as we talked about a few months ago, you know, one of the oil rigs turns into a giant transformer and starts to stomp on New Orleans.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and then they start fighting. Right, and
the climate change Godzilla and the oil rig transformer.
Yeah,
that would be epic.
They start fighting.
I want to see that.
and you know what the Republican reaction would be, and you know what half the country would be screaming for?
Yeah,
tax
Obama's head.
tax cuts.
It's all Obama's fault.
Yeah, it's Obama's fault. We have to cut taxes on the wealthiest 1%.
Yeah, fuckers.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, here we are. Here we are with Medicare facing a shortfall, Social Security facing a shortfall, to what extent it depends on who you ask. But let's agree that there's a shortfall. And what are the solutions for Medicare? They want to cut benefits. Why? Because clearly, senior citizens, whether they're senior citizens now or senior citizens in our generation, when we become old. We can afford to pay more, but we can't touch the rich. We can't touch the richest. We can't raise taxes on the wealthiest 1%, even though they're paying fewer taxes than their employees.
Yeah. because all they ever pay is dividend and capital gains tax.
Did you? I don't know if you saw Morning Joe this morning, but he turned.
No, can't watch that asshole.
He turned into. Maybe it was yesterday morning. He turned. He went off. It was like in the first 15 minutes of the show. He completely went batshit, screaming about how everyone is hiding their face in the sand about Medicare, and the only thing that can be done is that we all have to sacrifice and benefits have to be cut.
Mm.
And when in fact
we all have to sacrifice.
Yeah, right. That's not all. That's just the people who need Medicare. Of course, we can't raise taxes on the rich.
No.
I mean, see, to me, the most rational solution to all of this is you target waste, fraud, and abuse, which the president wants to do that, and you raise taxes on the wealthy by, I don't know, 5%. Whoa. So maybe their effective tax rate goes from 14% to 19%, which is still less than what you and I are paying.
Yeah. You're talking about raising capital gains tax on them.
Yeah, well, whichever. And, yeah. and for Social Security, you remove the income cap on the payroll tax.
Yeah, there should be no income cap on Social Security. I don't understand that.
Yeah, or as I think you suggested a couple of weeks ago, start the payroll tax at $250,000.
Right.
Don't even tax anyone making less than $250,000 for Social Security. Start taxing them at $250,000 and above.
Yeah.
And then
done.
And then I wasn't even going to talk about this, but Ezra Klein posted a great chart from the CBPP, and they determined that over the next 70 years, if you were to remove the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest 1% and apply that to Social Security, the Social Security shortfall would be completely obliterated. It would be solvent. Sure. Because and this is getting a little wonky, but the shortfall is equal to the amount of money in the Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest 1%. They're equal. Mm-hmm. It's basically, mm-hmm. It's 0.7% on one side, 0.8% on the other side as a percentage of GDP. So they would balance each other out. You take that money, you put it in Social Security, you repeal the tax cuts, put the savings in the Social Security Trust Fund, completely solvent for the next 70 years.
Mm-hmm. That'll never happen, though.
No, it'll never happen.
Because you just can't talk about tax policy in this country. You just can't. It's just such a metaphysical thing to Republicans. Oh, God, just gonna. Oh, Jesus is gonna raise taxes.
Yeah.
Somebody, and I guess he's waiting until the second term, and maybe New York 26 will is a harbinger that we're gonna turn the tide again and get. If we, I swear to God, if this president rolls into 2013 with a unified House and Senate, we are gonna see FDR style ass kicking. I swear to God we are. If that happens, if the backlash, especially if Palin is really making a run for it and it's going to be the clusterfuck that we've been praying for,
yeah,
on the Republican side, where, you know, Daniels has already opted out, all the moderates, all the legitimate candidates are done.
Mm-hmm.
So if Palin comes out and runs and causes this massive rift, this huge divide, this civil war within the Republican Party, and it is just a complete shitstorm, and we get the House back by some miracle, this president is going to go fucking apeshit with the goodness. I promise you that.
Yeah.
He's going to turn into liberal Terminator, just killing people with his liberalness.
Yeah,
that's what I get. Because right now, I mean, there's not going to be any – it's not going to be anything before the election.
Yeah.
And after that, he's got to somehow spin tax reform and tax raising taxes in a way that people get it, in a way that people understand. Because I just don't understand why we can't raise taxes on rich people.
Well, because
I hate them.
Yeah.
I hate rich people.
Well, the other element of that perfect storm arising would be the president getting a much larger victory than he did a few years ago.
And, well, I can guarantee you that. Yeah. I've been saying that for years. He will. His margin will be maybe double what it was in 2008. I mean, it's going to be a trouncing. It's just a matter of how big a trouncing, and you know, it's just a matter of degrees now.
Yeah. Because I mean,
because Palin is buying real estate in Arizona, and she's launching this fucking movie in Iowa. She's so up her ass. And the downstream effect of that is going to be in these congressional districts that are up for re-election in 2012. It's going to polarize those, and the ones that are, you know, it'll be Tea Party 2010 all over again if she runs, where the wackaloons are going to come out in favor of her, in favor of the Tea Party, because that'll be where all the energy is, any of the energy. Since Huckabee dropped out, these fucking Jesus freaks have no place to go. So they'll just get – it's just going to be a slaughter. It's going to be a slaughter. Sullivan posted a thing today talking about how Ryan's Medicare plan, his health care – or his budget thing is the Goldwater 2012 platform. And I've been saying that for years. It's going to be Goldwater. It's going to be LBJ Goldwater all over again.
Yeah.
And it is. You just trust me.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's hope so, because, I mean, that's going to be crucial. I mean, it's going to be crucial for him to win by a big margin. This way, all of those conservadems will have no choice but to go along with him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have that large of a mandate, it's because the secret to doing all of these things that he wants to do or that we want him to do.
Political capital.
Is political capital. And the political capital will swing those conservadems who, for whatever reason, weren't quite convinced enough, sure whether to go along with him on things like health care and the stimulus and so on. And so that's why it's those guys and women who tend to stymie any sort of good legislation as much as the Republicans do. It's your Ben Nelsons and you know, the Evan Bay type. Evan Bay is not in there anymore. But, you know, those guys, those types. Joe Lieberman.
They didn't buy in early because the backlash, the Republican Midwest whitey backlash, was so enormous so early on. The conspiracy theories and the complete nonsense. I mean, that everybody bought into this idea that Obama was early on before his triangulation and his moderateness and his stoicism and everything else had really kicked in. Everybody had bought into this the idea that he was this crazy super liberal socialist nightmare, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, before there was any evidence to the contrary, everybody bought into that. So they were hedging their bets against these bullshit constituencies that, like Ben Nelson, I've talked to that guy till my head was going to fall off. I mean, I don't want to say I know Ben Nelson, but he'd recognize me if he saw me. I was an active member in the Nebraska Democratic Party until I just couldn't fucking take it anymore, because Ben Nelson's no kind of Democrat. He's not a Democrat. Hmm. Fucking Nebraska Republican.
Yeah.
He's a Republican that pretends to be a Democrat because he needs Omaha in that district to get elected, and they just happen to be Democrats. So I fuck him, and fuck all those fence sitters and those conservadems. They can suck it. They need to get on board or get the fuck out.
Yeah, the thing that's going to get them on board is if the president just has a colossal 1964
just an ass
victory.
Whooping.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he needs to be like – I mean, LBJ was the most – I mean, he was so – if he didn't have Vietnam around his neck for his legacy, LBJ would have been the most effective policy president in the universe. That motherfucker could walk – just pick up the phone and – I mean, what he did with civil rights, the way he kicked ass on civil rights in the South is – it was a miracle to behold, an absolute thing of beauty. But – That's what I want to see out of this president, even though he doesn't have the legislative experience that LBJ did, obviously. I want to see him picking up the phone and people like weeping to hit, like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, just begging him for favors. That's what I want to see. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll never get that. But yeah, huge mandate, huge margins. And then just I want to see just liberal nightmare.
Yeah.
I want to see him kicking over. I mean, just regulating everything, crippling. I mean, just calling the heads of the banks and just teabagging them right there in the Oval Office. I mean, I want to see chaos and terror, liberal terror out of this man.
Well, I mean, here's what they have to do. I mean, they can achieve that if they play these goofballs the right way. If they really jump on the Medicare thing. And, you know, I mean, here was Eric Cantor this week suggesting that we need to cut the budget before we give any money to the victims of the twisters in the Midwest.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most tone deaf political statements I've ever seen.
Eric Cantor, who's perpetually tone deaf. He just doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
He's the biggest kind of amateur I've ever seen in my life. I mean, just an idiot.
Right.
An absolute bum-fuzzled, grab-ass idiot.
Yeah. Remember, this is the same Eric Cantor who embraced James O'Keefe by endorsing legislation to defund Planned Parenthood. This is the same guy who proposed legislation that would automatically make a law if the House passes it. It would just become law, not only the law that would be passed, but also this another law.
Yeah, the nanny boo boo provision.
So exactly. So if the House passes a piece of legislation, two laws suddenly just or two bills suddenly become law without any other process.
Magic, osmosis.
And so then this week, House Majority Eric Cantor, I'm quoting here from the news article in front of me, that if Congress passes an emergency spending bill to help Missouri's tornado victims, the extra money will have to be cut from somewhere else. Yeah. Quote, if there is support for a supplemental, it would be accompanied by support for having pay-fors to that supplemental. Mr. Cantor, Virginia Republican, told reporters at the Cap. Unbelievable.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
got to pay for it somehow, people. Sorry, Joplin.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is before we send any emergency funds to Missouri, you know, because entire towns have been decimated as if they were Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
Before we do that, we're going to go in the Capitol here in the hearing chambers. We're going to play grab ass with the budget. We're just going to fuck around. See if we can see there. I go again. I've really have to stop doing
it.
And we're gonna start screwing around with the budget. See if we can find the money, and we're gonna have lots of hearings and debates and things about it. Because
you people are picking the little rubble, you're sifting your life out of the rubble. There, right. We're gonna have some secret, some closed door subcommittee hearings.
Yeah, you guys are wandering the streets wrapped in Red Cross blankets, and we're going to try to figure out, we're going to spend the next 3 months figuring out how to pay for it, and then maybe we'll do something.
Well, it's Cantor and Boehner and those, it's their complete disdain for government in general. Mm-hmm. The fact that if we can't all agree politically that things like that force majeure, that acts of God, that things that are utterly out of the control and financial wherewithal of a place like Joplin to manage. If we can't all come together in a circle and say, yeah, maybe that's a legitimate role for government. Let's put partisanship aside and budgets and debt and all this and just say that, yeah, when a town gets fucking obliterated, that maybe there's a role for government to step in and help. If we can't agree on that, what the fuck? Why are you why are you a government employee, Eric? You pinhead! It's just the disdain for the role of government in anything. I mean, I can understand from an ideological point of view the welfare and healthcare and just what to them look like handouts for being lazy. I can understand that ideological. I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. But for a town that got fucking obliterated by an act of God, they can't come together and say, yeah, maybe there's a reason government exists to help in that respect. Yeah.
Well, that's
what I understand.
And I want to talk about that. I want to get into the role of socialism in America and how the demagoguing of socialism on behalf of the Republicans and conservatives is just that, because they're all socialists. They are. Admit it. Embrace it. Look it in the eye and say, you know what? It's a good thing. And thank God we have it.
And we're going to talk about
some. We're going to talk about that soon. Because we have to engage in a little bit of capitalism here.
I'm going to put you on mute because I have to cough my lungs.
Okay. Cough. Go. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob. That's Elvis over there. Today's show brought to you, as always, by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. It's the best goddamn soap in the world. Bath and body products like you wouldn't believe. Things that are vegan and handmade and handcrafted. And they're smart, too. Memorial Day is coming up on Monday. So it's a good time to buy a soldier a shower. You can go to Bubble Genius and order an array of soap and bath products, and Bubble Genius will send it to a soldier. And here's Bubble Genius with more on that.
Attention! By a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
By a soldier, a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Do something sweet for the troops. Choose from a selection of Bubble Genius bath and body products, and we'll send them to soldiers overseas on your behalf. Memorial Day is just around the corner. Buy a soldier a shower.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Somehow the dichotomy of the Bubble Genius commercial being all about the soldiers and Memorial Day, and then suddenly, shove Bob and Elvis into your pants.
Mm-hmm. Delicious.
Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, make sure to enter your promo code, Bob and Elvis, BobandElvis, and get 15% off your entire order at BubbleGenius.com.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've got some capitalism out of the way, let's talk about socialism. I want to play as a kickoff to this discussion, or as a continuation of the discussion, this clip by Fox Business Channel bigot Eric Bolling.
This guy's a douche.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to get to our all-star panel in just a minute. But first, leadership. One small word that carries huge weight. America is struggling under a mountain of debt, a spending spree gone wild in D.C., and 2.5 wars going on. Where's the leadership? In Brazil, drinking caipirinhas and kicking soccer balls. Americans are struggling, too. Gasoline stuck near all-time highs. Unemployment is stuck well above the promises the liberal left assured us would never happen if we just stimulated the economy with our taxpayer trillions. Where's the leadership? On the golf course or entertaining rappers in the East Room of our White House? And now, tornadoes devastating the heartland, killing scores and leveling just about every building in Joplin, Missouri. Mr. Obama, you've decided that chugging a few 40s and rediscovering your Irish is more important than a presidential visit to a community trying to figure out what just hit them.
Okay. You know what, Eric Bolling? Go screw yourself. You are, this guy is so completely wrong on so many levels, beginning with the 40s thing, at chugging 40s. I mean, nice. You know, talk about the dog whistle of all dog whistles there.
That was unbelievable.
He had a few sips of, some sort of Guinness stout at a pub, and he's chugging 40s. That's
he's
the perception.
Chugging 40s with his bling bling.
White guy on Fox Business Channel trying to make
that guy.
Trying to make the president out to be some sort of gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Because
a white America. That's what he is, because he's got the Negro.
Mm-hmm.
He's right. A little bit of a Negro.
Then let's go to. He said we're fighting 2.5 wars. Iraq is over. He ended that war. That war is over.
Well, you know, I'm not gonna nitpick there. There's still money.
Yeah, okay.
We're still pouring shit tons of money into Iraq.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
We may not be fighting it, but it's still a massive expenditure on the balance sheet there.
Well, so we're spending money on it. Doesn't mean it's still a war.
Yeah.
Regardless.
But I wouldn't put it in the lack of leadership column, for Christ's sake. I mean, I think they've got Iraq well under control at this point.
Gas
from a leadership's perspective.
Right. And meanwhile, gas prices are coming down. I have personally witnessed gas prices here in Hawaii, for God's sake, where gas is astronomically more expensive than it is on the mainland. Gas prices have gone down from, I think, $4.40 a gallon to, I just saw it today, for $4.06. Some places here in Honolulu are actually lower than that. They're actually in the $3 range, the upper threes. So gas prices are rapidly descending.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know how much control the president of the United States has over fucking gas prices anyway.
Exactly. Well, the ultimate point here is, since when do conservatives want the president, much less the government, interfering with anything?
Right. Especially, gas. That sounds like a free market thing to me there, Eric.
Yeah. Well,
his name is
not only with gas prices, but also with, you know, what's happening in Missouri. Do these guys suddenly want the government to interfere with what's happening in Missouri?
Well, he wants him to make a symbolic, you know, he wants him to go to there and walk around and point, you know, like Bush did. It took him 12 days to get to fucking New Orleans or whatever it was. You know, they're all about the symbolism of it. Never mind that he's got this fucking state visit planned for months on the calendar. You know, I don't know. You know what? If this was Bush and he was in fucking England fucking around and this had happened, you and I'd probably be on the same podcast going, well, why the hell hadn't Bush didn't rush back on Air Force One and shake people's hand in Missouri's? I don't know.
You know why? Because we support the government's role in incidents like this.
Well, yeah.
And that's exactly why. But, you know, look, these guys don't want the president near anything. Why would they want him? The reason the president would go to Joplin, Missouri is to do the sign of the cross over the disaster area and say, this is a federal disaster area. Therefore, funneling federal money into there to rescue relief and rebuilding and all those things.
Right. They're about to show. Yeah.
If he goes,
it's going to be to come back and say, look, this is a fucking disaster and we need billions of dollars to fix it. And that's when the right would go, no more spending on humanitarian things. Make up your mind.
And just to poke another hole in your equivalence there, the reason we would jump all over George W. Bush is because there was a general context of incompetence around George W. Bush that isn't there with President Obama.
Yeah, just like we would jump the fuck all over George Bush if he had signed 2008 in a guest book when he went to Westminster Abbey or whatever. Did you see that?
Yeah, because there was a context of George W. Bush being an idiot. President Obama worked his way up from,
I know.
I can do the whole resume.
It is all in about the context, but I guarantee you I'd have been making fun of Bush for doing that. So. No. I just try and check myself on these things where I give President Obama a free pass on being stupid. Yeah. So.
Well, you
I
can get
why he signed 2008. I frankly think that 2 doesn't look much like a 2. I think it's a 7. So I think he's actually signing the date, the year that he's actually from, because he's like a political terminator, sent back in time from the year 7008. Yeah. So that's what I'm choosing to believe.
Well, you can rest assured that most of the Wingnutosphere is jumping all over that. I haven't looked at any of the Wingnut blogs today. But the Teacots and all those guys, they're probably all over the 2008 thing, suggesting
that they don't even know what year it is.
Exactly, because suddenly intelligence is a big issue with the far right, right?
Yeah.
They'll apologize for George W. Bush for 8 years, but now the intelligence is a bit. They want a president you can have beer with. They want plain spoken presidents like Sarah Palin. But suddenly, if a very smart president accidentally writes 2008 in the guest book and he's an idiot, and suddenly intelligence becomes a big qualification for president, right? No, none of it makes any sense, as does the whole thing with socialism, which goes back to Eric Bolling's remarks, the president's got to go there and do yada 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 over the disaster area. But the fact remains is that as much as they try to deny it and as much as they try to demagogue it, the far right are just as big as socialists as anyone. And Lawrence O'Donnell did a great piece, I believe it was last night, about this issue regarding Bill O'Reilly and Bill Maher. And Bill Maher defined socialism on his show, something to the effect of, socialism is the idea that government has a role in providing education, government has a role in providing law enforcement, government has a role in providing health care. And that's it. I mean, that's the idea in Europe. That's the idea of socialism in a modern context anywhere. And Bill O'Reilly got into it. And this is, again, I'm recounting what Lawrence O'Donnell was covering. Bill O'Reilly said, well, yeah, all those things are true, but here's where Bill Maher is wrong, blah, blah, blah. But he prefaced the whole thing by saying that Bill Maher was exactly right. Yeah. And so Lawrence O'Donnell essentially proves that Bill O'Reilly and the far right are, in essence, socialists. And this is a point that's been made over and over again, that, you find very few Republicans who don't agree with, public education. Or don't agree with the public's or the government's role in providing military. The only thing they seem to freak out about is healthcare, which is arguably the most crucial aspect of what the government ought to be providing, because it directly affects our lives, our ability to remain healthy and literally to remain alive.
But not just alive, productive. I just don't understand the capitalist angle, the anti-capitalism angle in sick people. It's like if you want a productive workforce, it behooves capitalism to have everybody healthy and living long and working from a just a sheer labor perspective. I don't understand the math. Any dyed-in-the-wool supply sider should be all about having a healthy workforce. It's fucking it like everything in this country. It boils down to racism. I don't want to pay my money so those other people, and in their minds, they're brown people who can't work. So why should I pay for their health care? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely, 100% believe that it's a racial issue.
Yeah, because as soon as the chips are down, they're defending Medicare, which is against.
They don't understand. They don't. It's hard to think. When you think of Medicare, you think of fucking old white people with the oxygen machines. When I think of Medicare and Social Security, I don't think of brown people much. I think of white, grandparents. Wrinkly old white people with their oxygen tanks. So I think they can compartmentalize that because we just don't see a lot of commercials for AARP starring really old brown people. So I just think that it's easy for them to fund that kind of stuff or to think in that context because it's just old people are white, right?
Yeah. Well, the idea
brown people don't live long enough to get old.
What it boils down to is socialism for me is good. Socialism for you is bad.
Yeah, as long as I got mine. Bitches,
I'm an American and you're a communist, even though we're both rightfully so suckling off the same teat, to put it in Chuck Grassley's terms. We're both
awful,
doing the same thing.
People would want to be healthy, would want to scan the system by wanting to not die of totally curable diseases or treatable.
The people in the Tea Party and the people who lined up in Sarah Palin's, ridiculous cavalcades of racism and monkey dolls, all those people, they're using the same socialism that people on welfare are using. They're just using it in a different way.
Yeah. And that stigma is going to go away with the baby boomers because nobody in our generation or the next will apply the Soviet socialist connotation, the redness of socialism, because it just doesn't – that's just not in your cultural consciousness now,
right?
I mean we've got to get rid of these old fucking baby boomer white people that still attach socialism to some sort of red menace. Mm-hmm. Socialist, like the Soviet socialist republics. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about bread lines and not knowing if you're staying in line for toilet paper or blue jeans. We're talking about caring in a social way for your common citizen. Got to get rid of those baby boomers. Fuck them.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing. My God. Yeah. Speaking of baby boomers, did you see this? I don't want to get too far off on this tangent, but this set me off on my anti-baby boomer bullshit. You see what Peter Fonda said?
Oh, that was a good one. Teaching his grandkids.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he says...
Scoped rifles.
I have the quote right here. Peter Fonda says, I'm training my grandchildren to use long-range rifles. For what purpose? Well, I'm not going to say the words Barack Obama, but... Dot, dot, dot.
Cue the laugh track.
Mm-hmm. These are the guys who were all about peace, love, and
I was gonna say, what the fuck happened to him?
Yeah,
is he an easy rider? The biggest hippie manifesto of all time, the Easy Rider.
Yeah, he said that Easy Rider ended the Vietnam War. That's what he said right on the heels of joking about assassinating the president, teaching his kids to assassinate the president. I assume he's
all those guys. Grew up and made a little money, and now they don't want their shit taxed. So now they're wingnuts. Mm-hmm. Fuck That's you, right. Peter Fonda.
They all sold out. I mean, these people had the ability and the momentum. And I'm talking about the baby boomers. To change the world. And what did they do? They all, as soon as it was not fun anymore, as soon as they rinsed the mud of Woodstock out of their taints, what they did is they all sold out and became CEOs.
Yeah.
And so what do they do?
Everything got better. You know, Vietnam ended and, you know, the 60s just wore everybody out. And the 70s is like, hey, look, I can make a little money. And then the 80s, I can snort a little coke and work on Wall Street. And this is much better than, you know, having lice in my long hair and running around in the mud.
This generation has advantages that our generation will never, ever see. And the way it looks now, that's going to include full Medicare benefits and full Social Security benefits, because it's this generation that is stomping up and down Tea Party rallies and from a business point of view, mainly from big business and chambers of commerce, suggesting that we have to cut.
Yeah. Playing grab ass. Mm-hmm. They're stupid and scared and racist and awful.
Because it's all for them and fuck everybody else.
Because they are the inheritors of the greatest generation. Mm-hmm. Their parents were the greatest generation. So obviously they're untouchable. They, you know, they did everything right because their parents were the greatest generation. Fuck you, baby boomers. I swear to God.
I have nothing but disdain for hippies and that generation of hippies. I don't give a shit about hippies now, but the people, you know, people of our generation are just like hippie hacks who, you know, try to pretend. Yeah, pseudo hippies, neo hippies. I'm talking about the hippies from the 60s. Yeah.
Well, you know, I got it. Those guys, I mean, like I said, this new generation, it hasn't even sunk in yet to these pinheads that are running the world that this new generation doesn't give a shit about gay people. And I mean, they just could not give a shit. Things are going to change when these kids get political, when they grow up and start running things. I just hope I'm still alive. I probably won't be. I'll be dead soon. But so hopefully Peanuts generation, it's just going to be like, oh my God. Because it's just all about subjugation and racism and denying people their fucking rights. I can't believe this is what the world looks like in 2011. Yeah. Where's my jet car?
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, I'll be satisfied, you know, if we just maintain the status quo. And that's the sad statement. What
With
I just
Medicare
said.
Medicare and Social Security and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. The sad statement is that our generation will be overwhelmed, overjoyed if the status quo just remains the same. Yeah. Say nothing of actually improving things. Say nothing of doing some of the things that past generations were able to accomplish for themselves. And you know, at this point, we'll be satisfied if our leadership just doesn't fuck with anything.
Yeah.
Much like, you know, good Lord, can you imagine if there was leadership now? Can you imagine if the baby boomers who are all about changing the world actually, now that they're in power, started to change the world for the better instead of just figuring out new ways to dump PCBs and new ways to you know, to disguise credit default swaps?
Right.
I mean, can you imagine what could be accomplished if all of that energy was put into something positive like infrastructure or some sort
green
of new
energy.
Clean energy?
Yeah.
Instead, it was all a power. It was just they're all about maintaining their income and their pensions and their share of Social Security and Medicare, so they can pump more gas into their BMWs, their fucking douchey BMWs.
Yeah, consolidating their power and their, you know, their political clout.
Right. I'm starting to laugh at my own cynicism. But, I mean, like, how can you not be cynical at this point?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, they all have to die.
It's this. I mean, right.
Another 20 years, and they'll be gone.
Yeah. You're not talking about actively killing them. You're just saying that once
I'm not going to go start killing baby boomers. Just saying they just need to hurry up and grow up and die. Or they need to become politically incapable of – they need to go off and sit in their, you know, their rest homes and their diapers and get out of politics. Because they're just so tainted. They are so stained. They still carry all this baggage, all this baggage of the 60s, of the 50s, worse. They still have this 1950s mentality of the green lawn and the you know, the picket fence and the 3-point, you know, the nuclear family, and fuck all that. Mm-hmm. Stop living in this mythical Leave It to Beaver past.
Right.
This is a modern world. You people just – you fucking don't understand anything. Mm. Stop trying to make it in your own image. You're done.
Yeah. As soon as it was like, as soon as John Lennon was killed, they just embraced Reaganomics, and it became, and that's one of the reasons why I supported President Obama. And in fact, Andrew Sullivan wrote extensively about this. The reason I one of the many reasons why I supported Barack Obama in the primaries over Hillary Clinton was Hillary Clinton to me and the Clintons represented, even though I did I did support the Clintons in the 90s and, and during that presidency. But to me, moving forward into the 21st century, to me, the Clintons represented that selling out, where they were right there in amongst the protests and all the all that stuff in the late 60s, early 70s. And what were they doing? They were endorsing and parroting Reaganomics.
Yeah.
As soon as they got into power, as soon as they got into power, it became all about Reaganomics. It became all about trickle down.
Yeah, NAFTA. And, I mean, he made some horrible long-term economic decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and see, to me, that's representative of it. It's just certainly now qualifying all of it and saying that, you know, look, not every baby boomer is a jagoff and a
sellout. No, of course not.
You know who we're talking about. We're talking about the people who are now in middle management, upper management, CEO, CFO levels of corporations, people who are driving around in their, you know, BMWs.
Or these, you know, wealthy retirees who were, you know, IBM management for 50 years and, you know, now have a house in sunny Florida and a boat. And, you know, they're checkbook Republicans. They're, their only political interest is low taxes. That's it. I can't abide that. I can't abide that because that's not a political philosophy, low taxes. That doesn't – that's just such a simplistic – it just doesn't take anything into account, low taxes. So my dad is a you know, was a lifetime military. He's a defense Defense Department Republican. He has very strict, you know, guidelines and philosophies about American military dominance and national security. He was in the intelligence business for a long time. So, and I can kind of respect that. But even having said that, having he'd voted for Republican every year since 1964, he voted for Obama this last, you know, in 2008. But he that's the kind of Republican he is. My mother, on the other hand, is a checkbook Republican. Just don't you think smaller government's better than bigger government? Which means no tax, you know, don't tax me. Then we get in these arguments, and I just I'm like, you can't even argue with that. There's no defending that position.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's kind of another way to kind of explain what happened in a generational sense. You had the sort of the what's considered widely considered the greatest generation, which gave birth to the baby boomers. The greatest generation who did some of the. I mean, let's face it. They had there were a lot of faults, but they did some great things. I mean, let's talk. I mean, you talk about the New Deal alone, much less what happened in World War II, and then what happened with the you know the moon race and you know the Kennedys and all of that, and then you had they gave birth to the baby boomers who did nothing by way of any of that, who didn't who had the benefits of the world was handed to them on a gigantic silver platter. You know, great economic prosperity and advantages, the likes of which we'll never see for generations, were handed over to them, and they did nothing with it other than to hoard it for themselves. So so what's left? Here we are picking up the pieces of you know a gigantic national debt and deficit, things that were created by the infection of Reaganomics oozing its way in and facilitated by baby boomers. And so here we are in our generation, which is sort of, I don't know what do you call it, Generation X and on. We're kind of stuck with, we're stuck holding, you know.
It's a big bag of shit.
Big bag of shit. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, it's got to be, there's got to be, there's some kind of, the greatest generation must have instilled in the baby boomers this sense of, because the greatest generation lived, I mean, before they were the greatest generation, they were the Depression era generation. I mean, they the greatest generation grew up in the Depression. And, I mean, just a time of abject you know, denial of everything. I mean, you just could not have things. You just couldn't. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, or buts. And for most people, you just couldn't have stuff. And it was just a supreme degradation. I mean, you couldn't have things. So I think they wildly overcompensated in the baby boomer generation, where everybody had a house and there's just this massive post-war economic prosperity. And it was just, here, have everything you want, because we didn't have just this gimme, gimme, gimme sort of attitude in these kids. You know, nothing like what we've got today. I mean, Jesus, the way we lavish attention and everything on our children today. But I think that generation grew up in this with their parents thinking, I'm never going to subject my children to that kind of want and you know, austerity again. So here, have everything. And I think they just took that into their politics. And then by the 80s, by Reaganomics, it's like, yeah, free Coke and stock exchange for everybody, you know. It's just this wanton sort of greed, this just unbelievable greed that came out of that generation.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I believe that President Obama is so important as sort of a watershed president is that, you know, like in quoting Andrew Sullivan's endorsement of Barack Obama, goodbye to all that. We're moving on from that bullshit, and we have to start recreating America. We have to start rebuilding America in a new way. And it's going to take a long time because they really screwed it up.
Oh, my God.
And so you can't – and again, that's the whole idea. And it's weird how we're dovetailing back into the Obama presidency and pragmatic change, which is a common topic on this show. But it's there's a lot of fuck-upness about it.
It's going to legacy of Milton Friedman and supply side economics and everything that started from Reagan on voodoo economics, that legacy will take generations to untangle.
That's right.
I mean, we're still arguing. There is absolute concrete proof, empirical, numerical, statistical evidence that Milton Friedman was a cocksucking moron, that nothing he ever predicted was anywhere near right if you look at the long-term numbers. And yet people still say if you cut taxes and if you give rich people money, prosperity and jobs will follow. No, sorry, no evidence whatsoever. Fuck yourself, doesn't work, and we're still having that argument. It's going to take forever to bleed that out of the system, to wring that out of the system. That's why, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I was really wishing the 2008 too big to fail collapse would have been the fucking end of the world collapse. Because I swear to God, that's what we need. Yeah. I will continue saying it. We need complete disaster to purge ourselves. People, rich people, everybody needs to be reduced to the same level of begging the government to put things right again. That's what we need. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm unapologetic about the fact that I think the entire system has to fucking crash out and die to purge, because it's still got the ghost of Milton Friedman in its system. We still have this infectious disease of supply-sideism in our system, and the only way to get it out is to crash the entire thing.
Well, I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, I believe that it's actually, for a lot of us, it's actually happening. I mean, let's use myself as an example. I'm not going to belabor this, but just as a brief thumbnail, I went from owning a 3,000 square foot home to having all of my possessions fit into a 5x5 storage space.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a lot of this people are experiencing, but at the same time, there are certain groups of people who will never, who are immune to experiencing it. And those are the people.
There's not in a collapse like we had in the 30s, not in the 20s and 30s, not in a depression.
No, I mean, do you think that people who have their money stored away, who've got their money, who received their money through Reaganomics, through that quick turnaround, that quick gratification of Friedmanomics, Reaganomics, where they were able to accumulate sums of cash in the 80s and 90s and everybody else. Those people are impervious.
Read Too Big to Fail. If those banks had crapped out, if it had been like it, if it had happened wrong, and literally 2008 had been the point where everything broke, unless you're talking about people with literally millions of dollars in literally in cash in their mattress, there is no one impervious to a full system meltdown.
Well, I guess
you're about banks with no capital. You're talking about entire financial institutions and stocks and bonds and everything going away. I mean, just evaporating in these over-leveraged – if 2008 had been like Black Friday, if it had really gone wrong, even those people would have been fucked. I mean, fucked. And that's wealth that would not come back.
Protection. But what I'm saying is, I think we're speaking in two different terms here, on two different trains of thought in a similar direction, is that I don't believe the system is set up to allow those people. It's the essence of too big to fail. I don't believe that the system is set up to allow them to fail.
That's the system I want to break. That's impossible.
But the way the system is set up now, it's impossible to break it for large chunks of the wealthiest of Americans, which.
Well, fuck that.
Which are, you know, again. It includes a group of people who have designed the system to protect themselves.
Well, that's true.
And that is and a large part of that.
But it's a small subset of society. That's the thing. Politically, what I don't understand, I mean, I live in the middle of red state nightmare where people are voting, and we talk about – this is another common theme where Republicans – where idiot – Christian, Jesus freak, numbnut Republican wing nuts vote against their own economic interests because of family values and other bullshit issues, wedge issues, social issues. That's the political power there. That's where the political power is. That 1% that may be protected under, you know, some bullshit system that they wrote to protect themselves, they don't have the political power to keep a new deal from happening in the case of a complete collapse. If there was a complete system meltdown where everybody except maybe even the top 5% were just leveled out that would be they would not have the political power to keep another new deal from happening. The populist uprising from everybody to say, where's my government handout, would crush. That would we would be back to that again. Where's my government handout? That's what I want. I want the entire system reset to flush that bullshit out and get us all back to appreciating government the way they did in the FDR years.
Well, I believe that is actually, again, my original response to that idea is still valid. I believe that's happening, but I believe it's happening in slow motion. I believe that our generation and our kids' generations are going to have a very different appreciation for economics, for finances. And I think it's going to be day and night different from the baby boomer perception of economics and finances, because and it's again it's like the ideas and concepts and let's call it what they are, morals of the greatest generation, the Depression generation, skipped a beat. Over the baby boomers and is now going to land on us again, and it's but for us it's going to take much, much longer to change the system because the system is no longer designed for rapid change. And it never really was. But, you know, there was a time when a president could get up and say, I want to pass all of these things in my first 100 days. You know, I would set up a WPA, I would set up all these relief programs. That can't happen anymore because of the way the media is established, the way media is locked into the conservative establishment.
What you just said misses my point. The only reason FDR was able to do that 100 days is because of the panic and the tragedy of what happened to the system, of how the system crapped out on them and was failing them. The people would have given FDR Stalin-like powers. I mean, he had to fight his own best instincts, his own worst instincts, to rise to the level of power that people would have given him to do things, because he knew that maybe there was no going back from that. If he took the reins of kind of power that people were willing to give him, he could have been Joe Stalin. He could have done anything he wanted. I mean, the 100 days was an absolute political reaction to people lining up at his door going, please, for fuck's sake, do something. That's what I'm talking about, is the political motivation behind that requires massive system crashing. That's, I think, and I just don't think America's got the kind of time you're talking about needing to do to unwind this thing. That's my point. I don't think we have the time. I don't think incrementalism over the long haul, I just don't think we've got the time. Somebody's going to have to come in and kick the military in the nuts, massively slash the Defense Department as a first move to get anything done. But failing that, I mean, because we just got to reduce – I mean, talk about starve the beast. The Republicans want to starve the beast on the backs of you know, poor people in the middle class. I want to starve the beast on the back of American hegemony. I want to end American empire in the 21st century. But failing that – and nobody will ever do that because there's just no popular – there's no political upside to that. Right. Failing that, there needs to be a system crash because we just don't have the time for incrementalism. We don't.
Well, yes. And see, I don't know. I don't understand. I guess what I'm saying is I agree with you that we need a reset. But I don't believe that it could. It's actually practical. I don't believe that it could actually happen because, I mean, look, we had pretty damn close to a reset. I mean, we came really damn close to Great Depression, too. And it was averted slightly, but there was still major impact from it, whether it's jobs or whether it's savings, whether it's all varieties of things, lifestyle, housing. But what happened was is just the moderate solutions that were reached in order to avert a major crisis resulted in a major backlash. It resulted in the entire Tea Party movement, resulted in this huge conservative uprising where they said, where not only did they retake the House in 2010, but prior to that, there was just the media kind of enabling this screeching and backlash to what was done. So therefore, I envision that if there was an even bigger crash, that the backlash would be even larger. You see what I'm saying?
And so, yeah, but I don't think in a bigger crash, anyone would have the they wouldn't have the financial or social luxury. I mean, I'm talking about a major crash where there's no milk in the stores. I mean, where there's just nothing but government to save your ass. I mean, we still had the relative luxury after 2008 of, I mean, there weren't people lining up in bread lines and just wandering around the dust bowl. I mean, there was still the relative luxury of having your head up your ass. I'm talking about a world where you just don't have the luxury of having your head up your ass. It's crashed so hard that everything has to be. And maybe, and I don't know, it might require massive blood purges and riots and people killing each other. I mean, it may just be complete chaos. But I think most of this country's head up its assism has to do with just being a little too comfortable, a little too rich, and a little too fat, and a little too stupid. I don't think if you took this entire population and picked it up and put it in the DeLorean and sent it back to 1920 and let it ride a couple years and then live through the first years of the Depression, couldn't possibly survive. Couldn't possibly manage that. That's what I want. That sort of shock to the system.
Yeah, I just don't believe it can happen. I don't think the system is capable of allowing that to occur. I mean, it'll allow something close to screw all of us at the bottom end, in the middle class and the lower middle class. You know, that's work spendable. It doesn't matter. But the system will be protected for the sake of people, you know, just arbitrarily mentioning this number, $250,000 and richer. The system is rigged to protect people, to protect the baby boomers, the upper echelons of corporations and CEOs. That's what the system is designed to protect. Everyone else can, you know, are expendable. It just doesn't matter what happens to us. But it's remaking that is going to take some time. Anyone on the left who thought, or was dumb enough to believe or to project onto the president that change was going to happen instantly, is just sadly mistaken. No one ever said, especially the president, that he was going to snap his fingers and suddenly we were going to be living in some sort of utopia. It just was never in the cards, was never part of the plan. And it's impossible even if it were, even if it was, even if it had been part of the plan, it just doesn't happen in America. You just don't do it. You don't do it as long as there are people like Joe Lieberman in the Senate. I mean, the system is designed for slow change, and that's what it's going to have to be. We're going to have to rebuild slowly but surely. But I think as a consequence of that, we're going to have a much greater appreciation for not only how the system works, but for the benefits of that, you know, that slow pragmatic change.
Yeah.
And maybe that will change some minds on the right too, and realize that in this process that, you know what, socialism is good. There are good things about socialism. We want to limit it, which is, you know, the idea of democracy is providing checks and balances so it doesn't go too far, and so the government isn't controlling the means of production, blah, blah, blah. But to have socialism with regards to healthcare and preserving socialism with regards to the military, law enforcement, roads, schools, these are all good things. These are things that private enterprise just can't do. You know, and if the right is so enamored with private enterprise, why aren't people like bigot Eric Bowling screaming for Walmart and ExxonMobil and Halliburton to step in? Where are they? Where's their leadership in the tornado disaster? Because Isn't it all about private enterprise? Or is it Barack Obama, the person they hate the most in the world, and some of them want to assassinate? Why suddenly, he's supposed to do something? The person who they claim is incompetent by some sort of magical projection, some sort of payback, you know, for 8 years of a real incompetent administration.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, here we are trying desperately to unravel something that's completely illogical in and of itself.
Yeah.
But God damn it, you know what? We try. We try to make it happen. We try to make sense of all of it. That's our job on this show.
That's right.
Show brought to you, of course, by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Best bath and body products, soaps, and political things you could ever possibly want. If Father's Day is coming up, if I find any of you stepping into a Walmart or another store like Amazon.com.
Target.
For example. Target. They're all controlled by Republicans, conservatives. Shop. You have to support liberal businesses. So shop at Bubble Genius. Buy your dad some stuff from Bubble Genius. And do it now in time for Father's Day, which is just around the corner. I believe it's June 16th-ish. And summer's coming up too, by the way. Get your body and brain ready for the beach by going to their Summer of Love gift pack. Summer Love gift pack at bubblegenius.com/summer-love.html. And by the way, speaking of June 16th, Netroots Nation is happening in Minneapolis. And Bubble Genius will be there with their Michelle Bachmann soap for Minnesotans who want to give their taints some extra attention. And Bubble Genius wrote that. I did not. And because it's really, really important, I'm going to play the Bubble Genius commercial once again. So here we go.
Yeah.
Attention! Buy a soldier a shower!
Sir, yes, sir!
Buy a soldier a shower!
Sir, yes, sir!
Do something sweet for the troops. Choose from a selection of Bubble Genius bath and body products, and we'll send them to soldiers overseas on your behalf. Memorial Day is just around the corner. Buy a soldier a shower.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
I don't know if you know this, on History Channel, or History. They don't use the channel part anymore. Monday night, Memorial Day, they're showing the first part of a two-part, I don't know if it's if we want to call it a documentary or miniseries produced by Ridley Scott called Gettysburg.
Uh-oh.
And I'll be sitting in front of the television Monday night.
With your pants off?
Yeah, my pants off.
Awesome. Ridley Scott, huh?
Be wearing my rubber pants.
Much like Robert E. Lee did.
Robert E. Lee, who you can kind of blame, you can almost blame the Confederate loss at Gettysburg on massive diarrhea. Because Robert E. Lee had serious dysentery at Gettysburg. And so he was probably delusional. He was probably seeing things and hallucinating weird visions while orchestrating one of the largest battles in all of American history.
Yeah. So it's good stuff. I was almost killed at Gettysburg once.
Really? What? Yeah. How?
You know Devil's Den over there, the rocks?
Yeah.
Me and my years ago, probably 12, 13 years ago, took a little trip down there. Me and my brother-in-law were climbing the high rocks there in Devil's Den, and I thought I could jump from one to the other. No. And I'm a fairly large person and probably shouldn't do any sort of jumping from rock to rock. And I misjudged how much higher I was above the rock I was landing than I thought I was going to be. So I hit it. I made the jump, but I was so much higher than I thought. It was kind of an optical illusion that I landed much harder than I expected to. Oh, and to absorb that shock, I rocked backwards on my, you know, on my haunches and just fell. I probably fell 10, 12 feet. Onto my head. The last thing I remember hearing was the sound like a fucking watermelon coming open at a Gallagher concert. Just splat sound. Bounced my head off the rock. Knocked myself out completely.
Oh, no.
And ended up in the bottom of this ravine. I mean, just in between these two rocks. And a guy, a reenactor in a Confederate costume, woke me up. Or when I came to, I was looking at a Confederate soldier, and I said, "Oh my God, I've died and gone to hell."
I thought you were going to say you woke up and said,
"And boom goes the dynamite."
Well, close enough. But yeah, I knocked the crap out of my skull, just splat. I had to go get an MRI at the Gettysburg Hospital there,
oh my God.
Or a CAT scan or whatever. It was, man, that was bad.
They didn't try to amputate a limb or something.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. So, it gives lends special perspective to the battle. But, I mean, I'm surprised more people don't, like, get serious compound fractures at the Devil's Den area. Because, you know, this is one thing I tend to be ambivalent about, but sometimes I get really crazed and suggest that maybe the Park Service ought to close off Devil's Den and not let people jump and have, you know, because it, you know what Devil's Den is? I mean,
yeah.
it's like this big, if you've never been to Gettysburg, it's a big collection of giant boulders that were placed there and, you know, during the Ice Age, during the glaciers. The glaciers moved all of these gigantic rocks down into that valley, into that area. And there's just a gigantic collection, and they're massive, massive boulders. And yeah. it was the scene of some of the bloodiest fighting in that battle. And you know what it is now? It's a giant playground.
Yeah.
It's where all the kids go to rock climb and jump from high boulders onto lower boulders.
Yeah.
And nearly break their skulls.
Nearly smash their skulls open.
But, you know, I mean, I say this and knowing that when I was a kid and went to Gettysburg for the first time, that I played on the boulders. And jumped all around in the boulders and stuff like that. It's weird when you go to a place that's, you know, that's regarded as hallowed ground and you know, it's just one section of it that's very, you know, that saw the terrible, brutal fighting. It's just a big playground.
Yeah. Well, the whole park has become a little touristy.
I'm a little crotchety when it comes to stuff.
I know.
But, I mean,
but it's almost like Disney's Gettysburg now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, it used to be much worse. Gettysburg used to be just a gigantic tourist trap, much worse than it is now. I mean,
really?
Now you go in the town and it's you go to General Pickett's buffet and you can buy your, you know, your Johnny Reb cap, you know, your replica Johnny Reb cap at the gift shop, and you know, there's lots of touristy things like that. But the battlefield itself is slowly rewinding and becoming more preserved, and they're making it look more like it did when the battle happened, save for the dead bodies. But
it really is hallowed ground, though.
I mean, at one point there was a Stuckey's restaurant right on in the peach orchard section of the battlefield. There was a Stuckey's restaurant. You know, there's just some terrible things. There used to be like a little miniature train ride that you could take around the battlefield. In fact, you could still find where the train tracks used to be. And really just awful touristy things on that battlefield. Thank God some smart people have gone in there and preserved it.
Yeah.
But, you know, still business encroaches on it. And that's the biggest, most popular, famousest battlefield in America. Some of the lesser known ones like Wilderness and Spotsylvania Courthouse and mm-hmm. Chancellorsville are just being entirely gobbled up by consumerism and, you know, conservatives who love the troops are allowing businesses to go in and just take over all of that land.
Yeah. They don't love historical
troops. Baffles the mind. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but yeah, the Gettysburg thing is on History Channel. Ridley Scott produced it, evidently.
Nice. I will have to watch. So it's a documentary. Sure. It's not a movie.
I think it's the History Channel likes to do half documentary, half dramatization type things.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll talk about the aliens who interfered with the outcome of the battle. Because, you know,
now that Channel, I would watch.
History Channel is all about aliens and Bigfoot. They used to be all about Hitler, and now they're just the aliens and Bigfoot.
Yeah. Hitler versus Bigfoot is something I'd pay to see.
So, you know, this is something we like to talk about occasionally on the show. Did you see what Herman Cain said this week?
Yeah, he's smart.
Yeah. I'm just going
to
read
it. Trying to school. He wants to school all of us, tell all of us we better go out and know our Constitution.
Right.
He quotes from the goddamn Declaration of Independence.
That's right. This is Herman Cain. He's one of the leading Republican presidential hopefuls.
No, he's not.
Well, he was the popular one out of that debate. I mean, everyone in the Fox News Channel focus group, the Frank Luntz focus group, loved them some Herman Cain. Well, here's what he said.
Tell you something.
Quote, "We don't need to rewrite the Constitution of the United States of America. We need to reread the Constitution and enforce the Constitution. And I know that there are some people that are not going to do that. So for the benefit of those who are not going to read it because they don't want us to go by the Constitution, there's a little section in there that talks about, quote, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, those ideals that we live by, we believe in, your parents believed in, they instilled in you. When you get to the part about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, don't stop there. Keep reading, because that's when it says, when any form of government becomes destructive of those ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We got some altering and some abolishing to do."
Wow.
It's unbelievable. It really is. If it's even more delicious when they're being self-righteous about it. Like, you big dumb stupids, don't you know the why haven't you read the Constitution, especially that part that's not even in there?
Right. They fetishize the Declaration of Independence without even really understanding anything about it, how it came to be, how completely edited it was, how a monstrosity of Congress it was, you know, how much more righteous it was before Congress got its hands on it, and the fact that it's in no way a binding legal document over any of our lives. They just love them some Declaration of Independence, but no fucking nothing about it.
Yeah. So, right. So what Herman Cain was really talking about is the content of the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. Not the Constitution.
Pitiful.
Not the Constitution. This is something Sarah Palin loves to do. She loves to, I mean, she's all about misinterpreting the Constitution. We've become used to that. And it is in the form of being preachy with regard. So don't you know what the Constitution says? Constitution says
position flexible.
Position flexible, inalienable rights in the Constitution. And you know, I mean, I'm not expecting everyone to know this. I'm just expecting the people who are actually in a position where they're, you know, running for the office that is part and parcel of protecting and preserving the Constitution. I expect them to know what's actually in it. You know, people who are purporting themselves to be experts.
The ultimate defenders of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just experts. If you're running for president, you are putting yourself out there to be the number one defender of this document. That you swear yourself to it, to the upholding and protection of it. What the fuck?
Yeah. And if you're running for Congress, you're running to be part and parcel of Article 1, the first major portion of the Constitution. That's what you're running for. So you should kind of know what's in it. And you should know the difference between that and the Declaration of Independence. Likewise, if you're running for president, Article 2, the embodiment of Article 2, you should kind of know the difference. I'm just saying.
Yeah, important stuff. I would hope you would know the whole thing, but especially Article 2.
It's kind of critical to know that stuff.
Executive branch. Yeah. Kind of lays it out there. Position flexible.
Position flexible. Oh, speaking of Sarah Palin, a big stupid thing she said this week. Not really stupid. It was just kind of funny. She says, I think my problem is in regards to her run for president, which I still think she's going to do. She says, I think my problem is that I do have that fire in the belly.
She's got the teabagger principles.
Yeah.
She's got the fire in the belly.
It just ultimately embodies what she's all about. She's all ambition, no content.
Yeah. She's got the fire in the belly.
So she's all about, you know, the flatulence, the spleen venting,
the heartburn.
Right. But when it actually cuts, and the content is just about the same.
Yeah.
So when you're all about the spleen venting and the belly firing, if you want to call it that,
the belly firing,
then we know what comes out.
Yeah.
We know exactly what comes out: belches and farts.
I mean, can you imagine President Obama having said something like, I just have a fire in my belly for it? What did that even mean to a candidate like that? It's like, what is your platform, Sarah? What are your positions? What the fuck?
Doesn't matter. Got a fire.
She's got a fire in the belly.
Got a fire. There's fire in there. Don't touch it. It's hot.
Yeah. Rest of middle America. Well, goddamn. She got fire in her belly.
Fire in her belly.
Good enough for me.
Just like me, I got fire in my belly, but it might be because of the barbecue I ate last night.
Or stomach cancer. Stupid.
Have me some pork rinds and...
Hey, don't knock pork rinds. I live on those things.
Taco Bell and KFC. And my Jesus wears a tuxedo t-shirt because it's like formal, but he also likes to party because I like to party. So I was able to tie in Sarah Palin by way of farting to Talladega Nights.
Yeah.
That's why we get paid the big bucks. That's why we do this show. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. And we're going to be back for more show about this time next week.
Yep.
Take care. Bye.